You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Privatized profit and a socialized debt. This will be the economic legacy of the Vancouver Olympics. So argued many of the panelists at the Right to the City Forum held on Monday, January 25th. The topic of the forum was the economics of the 2010 Olympics. Chris Shaw was one of the speakers. He's a longtime critic of the Games, and he spoke about the financial costs, many of them hidden, associated with the Olympics. Here now is Chris Shaw.
I'm going to touch on some of the costs that I've been documenting over the years, and we'll start with a little bit of ancient history. Go back in time and remember when the bid was first announced, and then when Jack Poole, among others, said that it was really going to be this economic windfall for the city and for the entire province. And the cost estimate at the time, they said all in, all of the venues and all the construction, was going to come in at about $660 million of public money. And that $660 million would add a little more for security, and they said the security would be $175 million, which was an odd number at the time, considering that they hadn't brought in Olympic Games security costs anywhere near that for some 20 years before that. But the media believed it, and they bought that. And a company called Intravistas was commissioned by the province to actually do an economic impact study. And that's not the same as a cost-benefit analysis, but leaving aside the difference between those two, the Intervista study basically said, well, if that all the cost for the Games is $660 million plus a little bit for security, and then we stand to make, the GDP will profit, in the best case, about $10 billion. And then there was kind of a high-end, not quite best-case thing of about $6 billion, and there was a little bit less. That wasn't, maybe things aren't going so well, maybe $4 billion, and it went down to the low end where they were going to make $2 billion. And you'll remember at the time that our mayor, Larry Campbell, during the plebiscite that he actively stumped for the yes side, he was saying, well, Vancouver, it won't cost Vancouver taxpayers one penny. Okay. So now scroll forward 7 years to see what actually happened. So the $660 million in construction costs and venue costs somehow rocketed to $6 billion. And as Am has suggested, that was partially because the add-ons that they had to have to get the bid. So even though the Sea to Sky Highway upgrade and the convention center and the RAV line weren't considered, according to them, essential to the bid, they actually were. And in fact, every time they turned around, these were must-haves. These were the things we had to have to convince the IOC to come here. So those added on quite a lot of money. So the convention center was kind of a curious add-on from the Vancouver Board of Trade, because they decided they needed a larger convention center, and yet Charlie Smith from the Georgia Strait had clearly demonstrated at about that same time that this was being proposed that in fact we couldn't fill the convention center we had, and convention center business across North America was actually declining, but somehow we needed a bigger one for about, at the time, an estimate of $500 million contributions from the federal and provincial governments, very little from the Board of Trade, mind you, and that somehow this was going to really spur economic development of Vancouver. And now, of course, we know that the final cost was somewhere closer to $1 billion by the time that was done. The Sea to Sky Highway was a must-have to Whistler because the IOC didn't want to drive that extra 20 minutes, so leaving aside the environmental impact of destroying Eagle Ridge Bluffs and a lot of stuff along the highway, that went to a couple of $1 billion. And then the RAV line, as we all know, that massively disrupted business along the Canby Corridor, came in pretty close to the same thing, a couple $1 billion as well. So when you add those all up, the infrastructure costs, plus the venues that went over budget almost immediately by $110 million, when you add it all up, you get a figure that, still not counting security, is pretty close to $6 billion. Then, of course, the security budget, which we know was a fraud. We know that from, and actually documents obtained under access to information from the Correction and Freedom of Information from the RCMP that show that back in the day, back in 2002, when the BidCorp put forth their bid book and they came up with this $175 million total Olympic security costs, they actually had not actually talked to the RCMP. And the RCMP say that. They say the bid budget for security was a conceptual, theoretical budget that was derived without any consultation with their offices. We know since that time that the costs for security have gone to at least $900 million, and that's what they admit. That's probably an underestimate because we don't know what Vancouver's costs are, which are separate from the rest of what ISU has in their official kitty and what the military have and what the other different organizations that are contributing to that. So the security costs actually don't only include the RCMP and other policing agencies from across Canada. They don't only include Vancouver police. They don't only include the military, but Fisheries and Oceans, which controls the Coast Guard, Transport Canada, the Canadian Border Service, those clever boys and girls who decided to stop Amy Goodman at the border and interrogate her for an hour and alert 30 million Americans to something going on here, for which I thank them. That has skyrocketed. And so when you say it's $175 million going to a billion, that's probably still an underestimate. I had someone in the Department of National Defense tell me about a year ago, they said, you'll never know what National Defense spent. They have so many pockets to take it out of, you'll never track it down. Sheila Fraser, the Auditor General of Canada, couldn't track it down. And we also know that our own Auditor General here in BC can't track it down because the legislature has not cooperated with him in trying to figure out the costs. The village that was supposed to be free, it was not going to cost us a penny. Well, the village, of course, as we know from the events of the last election, cost us quite a few pennies. The same city council that couldn't find $300 million to house the homeless in this city, when David Eby got up in front of council in 2007 and said, if you start now and start building, you can get the homeless off the streets in time. City council couldn't find the money. They blamed other levels of government, who then blamed each other. And that same city council found itself bailing out Millennium. Southeast False Creek Developments Corporation was the company that was chosen through a very curious process to actually be the one to build the village. And they were so overextended and undercapitalized that they actually were borrowing their money from a hedge fund. That's really not a good idea in general. And what they found out very quickly is they got in over their heads because they had a number of other projects that were also going south. And somehow the city didn't know this. So that free project, the city started to toss money into it. They started to spend money. The original contract with Millennium is that they did the site remediation. That cost $160 million. They did other things for Millennium. They paid Millennium for the 250 units that were supposed to be social housing, which are not, as you know. And then they actually assumed part of the mortgage, a big piece of the mortgage. And then when Millennium got into trouble, the city of Vancouver essentially assumed the rest of the mortgage, one way or another, and ended up finding new financiers to fund the project. So the city of Vancouver went from not one penny, I suppose now Senator Campbell was technically correct when he said that, went from not one penny to a huge number that we don't completely know what the cost of it is. So I see various reporters in the room. I know they may be able to correct me, but for example, we know that the city spent $320 million on the RAV line. The city spent probably somewhere between $30 and $100 million on the various venues that went over cost. The city, of course, we don't know the security costs, and of course, their exposure to the village could put them somewhere in the billion-dollar range for kind of their all-in costs. When you consider the city of Vancouver's entire piggy bank, the property endowment fund, is somewhere between $1.5 billion and $2.7 billion, I'm not sure why that discrepancy exists, and city staff have not been able to help me on that, you realize that the city may be exposed in a way to this financial event called the Olympics that may be the most extreme example of any city in recent memory. So what does it all mean? These are the costs we know about. We're looking at least $6 billion. That's probably a low estimate. It's probably higher. We'll never know probably how much higher it is. And those are just the direct expenditures. Every time city council sits down, they spend money like drunken sailors. They don't have money for poverty in the city, but they sure have money for big screen televisions and for celebratory sites and for all those trappings and the signs that are going up on our streets, all those trappings that make the IOC feel very welcome. There are other costs that also came in that we tend to forget about. Those are things like the opening and closing ceremonies. Rather than VanOck take it out of its operating budget, which it should have been doing, which is about 75% is private funding, 25% public funding, rather than have them do that, what they actually do is they go to the government and they beg for more money to actually stage the opening and closing ceremonies. So the federal government contributed something to the tune of about $30 million more to those. And then, of course, there are the hidden costs. All the hidden costs that we don't know about, but we know exist. For example, so different. I think it was Councillor Reimer who, not too long ago, actually said in a council meeting that something, a huge fraction of city staff have basically been working on the Olympics since 2003. That's a hidden cost because all that time that they should have been doing the other things that city staff would do, they have devoted to the Olympics. And you also remember that Vanock went out to the various private sector partners and said, "Look, we need to borrow some of your workers for a couple months during the games." And I can't remember what the number is. It was quite substantial. It was hundreds to or more. And in the end, it was the province that wound up contributing those middle management staffers for the games. So those are more hidden costs to the games. Real cost, again, how do you determine that when you have hidden costs, when the government won't come clean through either access to information or freedom of information about all the different costs that have been associated with games? So if you said it's not $6 billion, it's $10 billion, would you be wrong? Probably not. Could it be more? Could be. We don't know, and that's the problem. We have not had accountability in any aspect of the games. We have not had accountability from the bid corps. We have not had accountability from the original bid society. We have not had accountability from Vanock, and we're sure not getting it from any level of government. PricewaterhouseCoopers, going back to, mentioned PricewaterhouseCoopers, going back to the original Intravista study that said that there would be something like $10 billion, best case, of all economic activity generated by the games. In fact, what we found is that number started to go south very quickly. And so when the government of the day, and I believe Jeff Dembicki here wrote something about that not too long ago, actually the numbers had fallen considerably. PricewaterhouseCoopers' study came out not long after that, and the economic benefits associated with the games were down to $1 billion. Well, when you spend $6 or $8 or $10 billion to make one, that's a bad business model. And if small business tried that, they would rapidly not be in business. And so somehow that was going to be okay because those economic benefits that were going to flow like water simply never materialized. And it was obvious at the time that they never would because of the history of past games. And where they point to Calgary, which is a false example, or they point to Los Angeles, which might have been the one place where they actually made money, It was actually the one case they like to use because they can demonstrate that the economy might have done well, but it hasn't happened since 1984. So what are we talking about when we're talking about opportunity costs? I mentioned that, you know, in economics it's perfectly legitimate to ask what else that money could have bought. It's not a naive question. It's actually a very real question. So let's consider a few things. So in my world of medical research, $6 billion represents 10 years of all government medical funding in this country. 10 years for 17-day party. That $6 billion, and again, let's pretend it's a low estimate, that $6 billion, if you brought it to a bunch of scientists who study neurological disease, and let me start off with this, unless you folks in the audience get run over by a bus or something other traumatic happens, we are all going to die from one of several diseases. It's going to be cardiovascular, it's going to be cancer, it's going to be neurological disease, it's going to be diabetes, something like that. Any of those diseases could be defeated and cured for an infusion of $6 billion. There's no question about it. You could gather those people and you could have them do it. That would be the solution to that. What about poverty in the city? Poverty is not as simple as just throwing money at it, but would $6 billion have made an impact in the downtown east side? The answer is yes. What about the forestry, which is dying in this province? What about the fishery, which is dying in this province? Could they have done something useful for pine beetle? The answer is yes. Could they have done something for the fishery? The answer is yes. Could they have done something for First Nations youth? The answer is yes. So all of those things that didn't happen are now going to be things that now never will happen, because what we see at all levels, governments, when they get in deficit, and provincial and federal governments are now in deficit, they start cutting things. They cut services, and eventually they raise taxes. And they scream that they would love to do these things, they would love to do something with the downtown east side, they would love to do something about pine beetle. It's too late though, because the pine beetle ate all the pine trees that they could eat. But they don't have any money. There's no opportunity left to do that. And so what we're left with is a legacy of debt. And that's truly what the legacy of the Vancouver Games is going to be, is a legacy of debt. And what one of my colleagues in the Olympic Resistance Network calls privatized profit, socialized debt. We have assumed the debt that Jack, for the building spree that Jack Poole and his friends started. Thank you.
And that was Chris Shaw of 2010 Watch. He's also the author of the book Five Ring Circus, Myths and Realities of the Olympic Games. He was speaking at the Right to the City Forum on January 25th. The forum was hosted by the Impact on Communities Coalition, and the audio was recorded for us by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock.